Members of the House Elections Committee will come to order. Welcome. We do not yet have a quorum, so we can't take any official action. But today we have one bill and one bill only. It is House File 591 from Representative Sanders. As you know, members, this represents more or less the collective work of the committee. We had a full hearing on this before it was a bill, when it was just a concept, and we were discussing how to handle the vacancy and nomination issue for partisan offices. This is, as I like to refer to it, kind of the Wellstone issue, what happens. And as the Secretary of State and others have informed us, because of some changes in federal law, we basically can't do what we've done since the Wellstone crash. So we had to rework the situation. And it caused us, I think, to revisit certain other assumptions we had about the system. And there was a working group convened by the Secretary of State's office, represented not only by all four caucuses in terms of legislatures, but by officials from both of the two of our major parties, the DFL and Republican Party. Either the chairs or vice chairs of both parties were in, I think, every one of those meetings. So it seems like we have buy-in, but I'll let the author of the bill talk to that. I can't move the bill yet, or we can't move the bill yet, Representative Sanders, but if you and others want to talk about it, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And Mr. Chair, you did a very good job of laying the foundation for the bill, and just to take it to the next step. This changes the existing procedures if you have a filing vacancy for a partisan office. Depending upon the timeline, either a new ballot, a new name would be submitted on the ballot and redistributed, or there would be not an election in November, and that special election would take place in February, allowing for candidate to be placed on a ballot for there to be a proper election. It's been great working with Ms. Frazier from the Secretary of State's office, and she can help answer any technical questions or walk through any more of the technical aspects of the bill. One of the things that's important to me, Mr. Chair, which I've shared with the committee and with Ms. Frazier as well, to make sure that we have a very bright line, if you will, when it comes to the withdrawal period, to limit as much as we can any gamesmanship that might happen within the system. So that's something that's important to me, and I ask members to make sure that they look at that aspect and make sure that that line is bright enough for them as well. But with that, Mr. Chair, I'm comfortable handing things over to Ms. Frazier or your prerogative if you have questions of either of us.
Ms. Frazier?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Beth Frazier with the Office of the Secretary of State. And as you said, there was a full hearing on this issue, and so I, unless folks have questions, don't plan on necessarily walking through the entire bill. There are just two things I want to note as kind of updates since that discussion. One is that when we talked about the periods at that hearing, conceptually we were talking about what happens up until the point when ballots can be changed and the latest date for making changes to ballots, and that being when the major political parties in presidential election years provide us with the names of their presidential candidates. And that I had the exact number of days wrong, but conceptually we were talking about that as the deadline, and so the numbers have changed slightly, but that's what we were talking about conceptually. The other thing I want to note is that there was some discussion among the participants in this task force and some discussion at the last hearing about what happens in the case of an incumbent constitutional officer other than the governor or lieutenant governor, so an incumbent secretary of state, attorney general, or state auditor, and if that person were running for re-election and passed away unexpectedly, and who would fill that vacancy and for how long. And the group had wanted the governor to fill the vacancy until the end of the governor's term, and then if there's a new governor, that person to have the opportunity to fill the vacancy until the special election. And Mr. Gearing pointed out that the Constitution actually precludes that. And so this does not make changes to that because it's already dictated by the Constitution that the incumbent governor would fill the vacancy until the special election.
So, Ms. Frazier, just so I understand that, let's say hypothetically in 2014, let's say that Governor Dayton's a lame duck, so he's not running again for re-election. And let's say that one of the candidates for state auditor dies in October.
Mr. Chair, it would have to be the incumbent.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Oh, okay. That is the distinction. So let's say the incumbent, God forbid, we don't wish any harm on Mizzotto, but I'm just using her for an example. An unfortunate foil. Right. Exactly. So some incumbent constitutional office, let's say, dies in October. So instead of there being two interim periods, now there's really only one.
Yes, Mr.
Right.
Chair.
So there wouldn't be appointment from October to the end of Governor Dayton's term, and then the next governor appoints from early January until the special is just one interim period appointed by Governor Dayton under this hypothetical, right?
Mr. Chair and members, that's my understanding, and okay. I think Mr. Gehring's understanding.
Ms. Fraser, before we go on, we do have a quorum. So I will move that House File 591 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. I don't think it has any other stops. So that is it. Oh, and if the Vice Chair has anything to say about last meeting's minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move approval of the minutes from February 12th.
Okay. All in favor of approval of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Okay, we're on the bill which has been properly moved. Ms. Fraser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Other than that, the bill reflects the discussion that the committee had a few weeks ago. If committee members would like, I'm happy to kind of walk through what's here, but I'm also happy just to answer questions.
Ms. Fraser, I think it would be helpful just for the record, since who knows, in future elections this could be an issue. I think it would be helpful to have a general walkthrough.
Sure. Okay, Mr. Chair. So Section 1 of the bill relates to partisan offices and says that a vacancy in nomination occurs if a candidate dies, withdraws during the two-day withdrawal period after the filing period. So at this point in time, that would be in early June. Or withdraws, filing an affidavit of withdrawal in which they state that they were diagnosed with a catastrophic illness that will permanently and continuously incapacitate them, preventing them from performing the duties of office, and that be accompanied by a certificate from two physicians.
Representative Wickler.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Fraser, as I read Section 1, then, we are essentially eliminating codifying the opposite of what, or not the opposite, let's put it this way. The Supreme Court made a decision last October, and we're saying they can't do that anymore.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, that's right. As Representative Sanders was saying, this clarifies that candidates have to choose whether they're going to run for office and file an affidavit during the filing period, and then they have 2 days to change their minds. But after that point, unless there is some sort of catastrophic illness or death, they are in the race. So. Section 2, Mr. Chair, says that in cases where a candidate dies or files this affidavit of withdrawal due to illness, that the major political party shall fill the vacancy by providing the name of the candidate. And that happens either if it's before the 79th day before the general election, which is in late August, then the party must provide the name by the 71st day before the general election, in which case that candidate's name will appear on the general election ballot. So this means that it would be up to the party to decide how soon after the vacancy to submit the nomination. So if the candidate died in late June, the party could wait until late August, or they could submit their name in early July. It would be up to them to decide how soon, but it has to be done by the 71st day before the general election.
Ms. Fraser, I have a question. I just want to make sure that this is, I'm sure it's in here somewhere, but since we were just talking about the affidavit and withdrawing for medical purposes, I want to make sure that we amended out the provision, which I think we all found universally troubling, that was in current law that said that the medical condition giving rise to the resignation has to have been diagnosed after the filing period. That's been changed here, right?
Yes, Mr. Chair. That's in current law in a section that's being repealed.
Oh, okay.
Which is why most of the language in Subdivision 1 looks like, or in Section 1 looks like new language.
Right. And members, just for your own memories, this was the section, I think I speak for all of us who were a little surprised that this existed, that said that the medical condition giving rise to the resignation had to have been diagnosed afterwards. So, and we can all think of many conditions of people we know who live with a condition for years, but the condition changes. It's been diagnosed years ago, but maybe there's a flare-up or a degeneration of some kind. We could name 10 conditions here, I bet, but that seemed pretty unfair to most of us. So now you don't have that requirement anymore that the condition must have been after June 1st or whenever filings are.
That's right, Mr. Okay. Chair. So, Mr. Chair, in paragraph C, what this says is that if the death or withdrawal because of illness occurs after the 79th day before the general election, then basically the November election for that office is canceled, and the party must provide the name of a candidate to, and that candidate and the other candidates who are already going to appear in the general election ballot will appear in a special election.
Ms. Fraser,
yes.
I have another question, which is, and I should have looked at this, obviously, before. Have we made clear in here that it's a major party nominee?
Yes, okay. Mr. Chair. This only applies to the three major political
parties. With all due respect to the Socialist Workers Party, I'd hate to cancel a gubernatorial election or a U.S. Senator election because, you know, the
yes, Mr. Chair. It's just
marijuana legalization party nominee, you know, fell off a bridge or something. Okay.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Well stated.
Mr. Chair, Section 3 has to do with the situation if a major party candidate withdraws during the withdrawal period, and that creates a vacancy in nomination. So that would be the case if only one candidate for a party filed. So if, for example, a popular incumbent filed for re-election, nobody filed against him or her in their party, and then during the withdrawal period, they changed their mind. Perhaps they won the lottery. And so during that two-day period, they changed their mind, leaving the party without any nominee. In that case, this says that there would actually be a new filing period, just as there is for nonpartisan offices. We're close enough to the original filing period that there's time to have a new filing period and a new withdrawal period so that the party can have candidates appear on the primary ballot if necessary. Section 4 relates to the issue of candidates for governor and lieutenant governor, and says that if the governor candidate withdraws, that the party must name both a new gubernatorial and lieutenant gubernatorial candidate, and that if the candidate for lieutenant governor dies or is struck with an incapacitating illness, that it is the gubernatorial candidate that names the new lieutenant governor candidate. This says that if that happens to the candidate for lieutenant governor after the 79th day before the election, after it's too late to change the ballots, that the election will still move forward even though the old lieutenant governor candidate's name will appear on the general election ballots.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a procedural item. We didn't have a quorum at the beginning, and then we moved this to the general register, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
And I know we're going to get to this, but there's a subdivision 9 that talks about an appropriation. Should this be sent to state government finance and then moved on from there, because there is an appropriation question in here?
Mr. Chair, I'd be interested in what Mr. Gehring would say about that, but my understanding is, since this is a speculative appropriation, it says in the case of a statewide special election, we don't know when or if that will ever happen. Could be 20 years from now. I don't think it would need to Mr. Gehring, do you have an opinion on that?
Mr. Chair and members, I guess I don't know for sure whether this requires the bill to go to the Finance Committee or not. I mean, you're correct that it doesn't specify a dollar amount at this point. It's just sort of an ongoing available appropriation if, in the event that vacancy nomination occurs, the appropriation is needed. I guess I don't know what the rules are for the Finance Committee.
Yeah, thank you. I think it's a fair question, but given how speculative this is, I'm not sure how the what kind of fiscal guidance we would get from MMB. So at this point, I'm satisfied they can go to the general register. So I guess we'll stick with that motion, but it's a fair question. Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of other thoughts on that. Even though it may be speculative in nature, at least we'd have sized the scope of where expenditures may come from, so we get some kind of an idea. On a go-forward basis, we're talking closer to $10,000 or $10 million on something of this nature, just so that there's something documented with this bill that we have an idea that we've at least looked at that is my rationale for raising the question.
Representative Driscoll, I think that's very fair. You have my commitment that what I will do is, although I don't think we need a committee referral for that, I will contact MMB and I will get information and I will see what kind of analysis they can do. Surely there must be some that they can do in terms of figuring out how much this might cost, even a range. I think that would be important information for members to have on the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one other item to kind of close the loop on this. I raised the question. You and I have had a discussion, but I'd also like to maybe just get the bill author's view on this as well, since he is the author of the bill, if he concurs with that.
Representative Sanders, care to comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think both sides have good points. I'm happy to, I guess, do whatever the will of the committee chairs are, including State Gov Finance Chair Murphy. I'm confident that the weight that your name carries, Mr. Chair, will help in that committee as well. So if it's needed, I'm happy, very happy to take the bill to State Government Finance. I see both points on that. So,
well, Representative Sanders, I think maybe one good accommodation here will be I will pledge to you to work with MMB to get what may not formally and officially be a fiscal note. And I know the Secretary's office would be obviously phone call number one, I would be imagine, at whoever's desk this lands on in MMB. So I can work either with MMB or more directly with the Secretary of State's office to get some reasonable target range. And Ms. Fraser, you may have a comment on that. And then, you know, this is going to the General Register. If there are concerns that these are either imminent costs or that for some reason we need to go to the State Government Finance Committee, we can always make that motion on the floor. But for now, I'd like to stick with the motion of going to the General Register. But it's a legitimate question to ask. Ms. Fraser, on that point.
Mr. Chair and members, we generally estimate that a statewide election costs between $2 and $3 million.
Okay. Ms. Fraser, to the bill.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Section 5 of...
I'm sorry, Representative Verdahl. I skipped over him. He had a question.
Thank you, Ms. Chairman. And actually, Ms. Fraser came up, gave me another question with her answer. $2 to $3 million for an election, does that mean both general and primary, or is there a difference in cost?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, that's for one election. So that number comes from a fiscal note that we prepared for a bill calling for a presidential primary, which would be one standalone election, and we estimated between $2 and $3 million.
And okay. Actually, Representative Riddle, as I understand the bill here, there wouldn't be a primary for this special election in this case, right?
Mr. Chair, that's accurate. The party names their one candidate, and there is no primary.
Okay.
Representative thank you, Ms. Chairman. Just a couple of quick questions. First of all, there are no obstacles in this for someone who just wishes to withdraw for whatever reason. Is that correct?
Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, there is it that would be strictly prohibited after the withdrawal period that immediately follows the filing period.
So as I understand it, what happened with our former colleague this last summer would no longer be able to happen. In other words, if that person decided to withdraw, in that instance there would be no opportunity for, in that case, the DFL, to name a replacement candidate.
That's right, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can we make this retroactive?
Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair, I don't have an answer to that question.
Okay.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. One final question. The days here, 79 days before the general election, 71 days. What is there a particular event that is counted from, or I'm just curious as to what that is.
Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, the 71st day before the state general election is the date that the major political parties in presidential election years are required to give us the names of their presidential and vice presidential candidates. And so it's really the last thing that we're waiting for to prepare the general election ballots. After that point, the counties move directly to working with the ballot vendors to program and print the ballots. So the 79th day is a Sunday, actually, but it allows for the five-day filing period and the two-day withdrawal period so that the withdrawal period ends on the 71st day.
Right. Thank you.
Members, Mr. Gelman just did a little snooping around as to what the normal practice is for kind of a speculative appropriation like this, especially if it's in the bill, and probably he discovered, though it is a gray area, probably the safest course is to have it go before state government finance, on which I sit. So I'm going to withdraw my previous motion, and I'll make a new motion that House File 591 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. So that will be the motion. Ms. Fraser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Section 5 of the bill sets the date of the special election for the second Tuesday in February, which should allow enough time for local election officials to do processing to wrap up the state general election in November. This would require that the absentee ballot period would usually begin between Christmas and New Year's. Section 6 of the bill says that there's a 46-day absentee ballot period, and because there are holidays in there, it says that the ballots must be mailed out between 50 and 46 days before the election to ensure that they don't have to be mailed out on a holiday, that the auditors could mail them out the day before if need be, but also ensures that ballots are sent out fairly uniformly statewide so that it's not as if one county auditor would send them out December 1st and other auditors would send them out January 1st. It also says that anyone who applied for an absentee ballot in the November general election will automatically be sent a ballot for this special election. They showed interest in voting in that election, and so instead of requiring them to file another application to submit an absentee ballot or be sent an absentee ballot, they would automatically be sent one. Section 7, as Representative O'Driscoll pointed out, is an appropriation in case of a statewide special election required by this section. Section 8 is a section of the bill that basically lines the statute up with the Constitution, which requires the governor to call for a special election in the case of a vacancy of a legislative seat. So this just says the governor must call the election in accordance with what we've outlined here. Section 9 is a repealer, and this includes the section that you referenced before, Mr. Chair, that current law says candidates can withdraw if they have a catastrophic illness that was diagnosed after the time for filing, and also repeals another section of the current law related to vacancies and nomination. And I don't have that section right in front of me, so I don't know exactly what it does, but perhaps Mr. Gearing can fill it in. Section 10 says that this is effective the day following final enactment. And that is the bill.
Ms. Fraser, I have a question about, I just want to make sure, because we talked about this before as a committee, that in a case of death or withdrawal, the party, the political party or parties, I guess, unaffected by that withdrawal. In other words, not the party whose candidate withdrew or died, but the other parties don't get to re-choose their nominee. They're stuck with their nominee, basically. True?
Mr. Chair, that is true. And that's covered in lines 2.31, starting on that line, except for the vacancy and nomination, all other candidates whose name appeared on the general election ballot must appear on the special election ballot.
Okay. Any comments or question from members? Anyone in the audience who wishes to be heard on this bill? Okay. Seeing no further comments, Representative Sanders? Okay. All right, members. Well, this was a true cooperative project, I think, and I think it's hopefully a good product. It will mean some changes, obviously, but I think they're probably overdue changes. So, members, with that, I'll renew my motion that House File 591 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The motion prevails. Members, before we go, that's the only bill for today. We have one bill and possibly another to be added on Thursday. And then next week, we expect to take up, I think, on Tuesday the 26th, a ranked choice voting bill. And on Thursday the 28th, at least tentatively, the National Popular Vote Bill, and there may be others added as well. And Representative Sanders and I will be meeting to discuss the committee agenda privately shortly. So with that, members, unless there are any other comments, questions, concerns, meeting is adjourned.